Our first speaker is not the international grand poobah, but may well be. Lord knows he's held every other senior position in the industry. His name is Trevor Matthews. He's currently a non-executive director of AMP Limited, although he's a former president of the Institute of Actuaries of Australia. He was president in 1997. He, as I said, is a non-executive director of AMP Limited, Bupa Australia and New Zealand, Covermore, which is a recently listed travel and medical assistance provider, and the RAP platform operator. I often have dreamed of being a RAP platform operator, but I just never had the voice for it. FNZ Australia and New Zealand. He also advises Tokio Marine on their international strategy and provides executive coaching through the Foresight Global Group. He came back to Australia in 2013 after 15 years overseas with a strong track record of turning around and leading profitable businesses in the UK, Asia, North America and Australia. He was Actuary of the Year in 1989, just saying. Trevor, would you like to tell us all about yourself starting now?
Thank you. Thanks very much. Well, thanks very much and thank you. And good morning, everybody. It's great to be in an actuarial group. It's a long time. I've been overseas for 15 years, came back just 2 years ago. We had boys who were then 11 and 12. We wanted to get them back to high school. So came back from overseas, then decided, was approached to run a start-up life company and looked at that for a while, but decided not to do that. And then had lots of cups of coffee with lots of different people, and gradually the NED role started to accumulate. This morning I'm going to talk a bit about the actuarial training and why I think it's important and how it's helped me in the various roles that I've tackled. I'm also going to talk about a couple of key career points in my history, and then make one observation about the current business environment. The non-executive roles are really very, very interesting and quite varied, and they give me the opportunity to look at a whole range of different issues, not just the traditional actuarial ones. I'm also at the moment chairing a committee which is looking at the profits that New South Wales CTP insurers are making, because we've had a good history of profits coming out of that business over the last 15 years or so, 12 years or so. And the upper house in New South Wales is worried that the profits have been too great. Now, I remember CTP business in this country 25 years ago when it wasn't so great at all. So there's been a lot of changes in society, in the business world and in the actuarial profession and the economy since I did my training all those years ago. But I believe that training has continued to be very, very important to me. There's three areas I'd like to focus on that I think are important. First of all, the technical qualifications themselves. Secondly, the global nature of our profession. And thirdly, which was mentioned interestingly in the video, in the short clip a few minutes ago, the need, which I think is very, very important for all of us to be very, and continue to be very, very curious. I've always thought that the actuarial training gives us a very strong bedrock, which enables us to understand how businesses that we study should work. Not necessarily how they do work, but how they should work. And I've always found it important, in whatever role I've been carrying out, to make sure that I had the chance to understand each of the components that were being talked about and how they build up to the total picture. I've often found myself sitting around a boardroom table or a management table, and somebody comes in and makes some what appears to be outrageous statement about some issue of the day. And every time I've wanted to go back and work out just what are the different components, how do the building blocks accumulate so that you can get to a sensible conclusion. It's interesting, this global reach of the profession, and of course the profession is much more global today than it was when I was president and when I was a student. But right from the very early stages, I came to appreciate the importance of the global nature of our profession. I can well remember Alf Pollard, professor at Macquarie University, telling us that he'd been commissioned to do an inquiry by the then government. This is way back in about 1973. About indexing old age pensions. And he told us in the lecture that he didn't know much about this issue. It was a new issue, but he'd been asked to do this report. And so his first action was to write, using letters in those days, was to write to some of the actuarial colleagues and experts around the world who he'd come into contact with during his career. And that enabled him very quickly to come up to speed with what the issues were, and therefore gave him a very good start on that report. That's stuck in my mind for a long, long period of time. He actually recommended then that the old age pension should be indexed at 1.4 times the CPI with an upper limit of AWE. That was that recommendation was not implemented or was not maintained for a long period of time. But it's interesting because coincidentally, I was asked when I was overseas, I was asked in 2007 by the new Labor government at the time to do a similar inquiry or somewhat similar inquiry into the indexing of public sector pensions. And quite interestingly, my first source or reference material was that report, 35-year-old report written by ALF. I think that the geographic isolation that we face here, the fact that we are a long way from the rest of the world, and perhaps when I was coming up through the ranks, a bit of an inferiority complex, we always thought that they knew better overseas, meant that me and a lot of people like me at my time were really, really keen to get overseas and to see what was going on. In fact, that was one of the main reasons that I joined the company that I did from school. I had cadetships in those days. The companies were offering cadetships. It was very good, and I was lucky enough to be offered three different cadetships, one with the Commonwealth Bank, and at that stage I thought, no, I didn't want to be a banker, not that I knew much about it, and maybe that was a mistake in retrospect, who knows. The other one was a company called City Mutual, which was a proud Australian mutual, and the third one was from Legal & General, which I read, I didn't know much about them of course, I read was a big company based in London overseas, and I thought, right, that's the reason, I'll choose the Legal & General, I like the guy who interviewed me, and there might be a trip overseas one day. And it's funny how little decisions like that have a dramatic impact on your life. I ended up working for that company, or going to uni on a cadetship, coming back out of uni, qualifying, taking 12 months off, travelling around the world, working at L&G in the UK, and in total staying with L&G for 26 years. It's quite remarkable. It didn't seem like 26 years. So I think that in order to succeed in business, I think it's very important to take advantage of this global connectedness that we've got. And I encourage everybody to do this. I say to people, if I was running a show or a business or a unit, I wouldn't expect people to dream up new ideas themselves. That happens every now and again in business, and we have some spectacular examples from time to time. But I do definitely hold everybody accountable for literally scanning the world to see what's going on. And if there are good ideas in different places, we should go out and grab them. We should grab them and bring them back. We should implement them in our own business if that makes sense. Because the world is much more a global village today than it was before. And I've been lucky enough to be able to do that a couple of times myself. Shortly after I qualified, this is a long time ago now, I was able to go to a Society of Actuaries meeting in the United States on my way to that trip to London that I talked about, probably one of the first trips to London with the Legal & General. And at that time, there were two companies in the United States that were offering significant discounts to life insurance discounts to people who didn't smoke, non-smokers discounts. And that looked like a significant development to me, although we had no statistics, of course, no records at all. So I came rushing back to Australia, and I said to the boss at L&G at the time, we should do this. This is something serious. It's not just a marketing gimmick. And we did. So our company was the first to introduce that, and of course all the other companies followed, except for Eagle Star, who were owned by BAT. They didn't follow that for quite some time. And so I've had a bit of fun doing that in different places. The terminal illness benefit that is now common, I was able to pick that idea up from the United States at another conference in 1990 and bring it back. I've been able to export the flexible mortgage from this country to Canada. And the RAP platform that you talked about earlier, when I got to the UK in 2004, I found that the RAP business hadn't taken off over there, and so I certainly helped move that idea forward in the UK. So this global connectedness, I'd encourage all of you to take advantage of that. We're in a wonderful profession. It's still a relatively small profession, and I think it can benefit all of us by the interchanges. The third quality is this point made earlier in the video about curiosity. I don't think any of us should be satisfied with what we're told. I think we should always be looking for the next issue. We should always be asking more questions. And again, it's funny, isn't it, when I was asked to prepare some thoughts about today, I went back to my early training. And again, Alf Pollard, who looms large in my life, obviously, he came to mind. And I remember him coming in to us. I think we're in the second or third year at university. And he said, right, I want you to imagine you're going to visit this manufacturing company, and I want you to come up with some questions that you might ask from an investment point of view. So he then left us, and we sat around the room, and we came up with two or maybe three questions, which we proudly put up on the blackboard, as it was in those days. He came back in, and he didn't lose his temper very often, but he wasn't very happy. He thought, these young people, what have they been doing? And he then launched into a tirade of all the different questions that you might ask when you visit a manufacturing business. It was quite remarkable, and I remember he filled the whole board with questions. And it really, really hit home to all of us there that this importance of curiosity. So I definitely encourage that. And it's interesting, one of the other roles I'm doing now, which wasn't in the CV, I'm chairman of a company which is hoping to list on the stock market very, very soon. It's a company called First Available. And this company is working on the basis of trying to encourage people to book their medical appointments online rather than over the telephone. Nice idea. But the curiosity is a very, very important power, I think, for me in this role. I need to understand a whole lot of things about different areas that are new to me, and I'm enjoying that very, very much. Talking about career, I was asked to talk about a couple of critical points in my career, just for illustration. I mean, we're all doing different things. I consider myself very, very lucky. It's quite funny, stumbling into legal and general, like I said, and then working my way up. I always tried to set myself sort of 3-year goals. I remember, you know, the first goal was to get to university. That was pretty important in those days. The next goal was to get the appropriate passes at uni so that you could come out and get onto the actuarial final subjects. Then, of course, there was the goal to pass the exams. And then I thought the next logical goal, because I trained as an actuary and I qualified as an actuary, was to become chief actuary. So, yeah, I thought that was a good idea. I should become chief actuary. Right. So it was logical to try and become chief actuary at the company that I'd spent that time with so far. And I worked at it, and that was all good. And then we had a change coming up where the then current chief actuary was either going back to London, I think going back to London, Robin Snelson, who some of you would know. And he was going back to London. I thought, well, this is it. I think I was 27. I thought, yep, definitely, I'll get this job. I'll be the chief actuary. And I was absolutely flabbergasted and so disappointed when, of course, they didn't appoint young Trevor as the chief actuary at 27. What did they do? They brought another bloody POM out from the UK. Jeez. Anyway, I was furious. And so I said to the boss, this is terrible. This is the end of my life. What am I going to do? I've got to leave. And I got the normal sort of advice, but it was very good advice. It was calm down. Everything's all right. You've got a long career in front of you. Be a bit patient. And then he said, I remember this vividly, he said, you might actually learn something from this fellow. Oh, I said, I don't know about that. But I did. I did. And I'm still very good friends today with that gentleman, Chris Hares. He was a great actuary. He came out from the UK. He took over the role. He did it very, very well. And then subsequently, when he went back to the UK, I got the chief actuary job. And I was a much better chief actuary for that experience than if I'd gone straight into it. There's no doubt about that. Talking about chief actuaries, it's funny how the world changes, because when I was at Legal & General, in the CEO position, my chief actuary then was Rocco Mangano. I don't think Rocco's here. I'm not sure if he's here or not, but I know there's some AMP people here. Of course, I went off on my journey around the world and came back, and Rocco did other things. And of course, now I'm back at AMP, and Rocco's the chief actuary at AMP. So it's quite funny to reunite with my old colleague. We used to have a bit of fun, Rocco and I, in those days. We used to go around and talk to the salespeople, and we used to get up in front of the salespeople, and I'd say, look, nice to be here today, and I've got our chief actuary here, Rocco Mangano. I would say, look, I can predict 1,000 people aged 30. I can predict how many are going to die next year, but Rocco Mangano from Sicily, he can name them, so be careful. Anyway, good old Rocco. The second key career point was, for me, was, these goals that I keep talking about, was to finally get to the group CEO position at Friends Provident, a listed company in the UK. Fabulous old company, which, unfortunately, I'd say, has just now been taken over by Aviva. But at that stage, it was struggling. It had demutualised. It had not understood, like a lot of the mutuals, had not understood the dynamics of the cash, and it was running out of cash. And it was going through a crisis, so I was asked to come in and become the group CEO. And I thought, well, this is pretty exciting. Group CEO of a listed company in London. Boy, this is really good. I'll be able to do lots of stuff. Not so. It didn't take me long to realise that even if you are the group CEO of a listed top 100 company in London, the power that you have, the control that you've got, is not unlimited at all. In fact, it was very frustrating for me. It took me a while to understand that I needed all my wits about me to convince my chairman, who's a wonderful man, who's now coincidentally chairman of Aviva, my chairman and my board of directors and my management team, but mostly the board and the chairman, of things which seemed to me just blindingly obvious that that's what we had to do. But no, it wasn't like that. I really had to work hard at it. So I think that the lesson there is you've got to be persistent, you've got to have your facts about you, and you've got to work hard to get decisions which might seem very obvious to you approved by those around you. The final thought I want to leave you with is the big issue of the day in financial services, not just here but around the world, which is the restoring of trust in financial services. And I would imagine you've talked about that yesterday and that you'll be talking about it again today. It's very sad. I think it's very upsetting to a lot of us to see the decline in trust in financial services. I used to go around the UK carrying around a book called An Anatomy of Britain by Anthony Sampson, written in 1962. And it's a wonderful book. You open the front cover, and inside the front cover there are these circles about what was impacting life in Britain in 1962. And you've got the civil service, and you've got Treasury, and you've got other bits and pieces like that, newspapers, I suppose. And you actually had insurance, a big circle about insurance. So very excitingly, you turn to page 416, and you see a big chapter all about the mighty life insurers and general insurers of the day. And it talked about the men. They were all men from Prudential who went around knocking on the doors, collecting the weekly payments. And it was quite clear that in those days, and this is back in the 50s and the 60s, insurance was very well regarded, very well respected. Those men from the Prudential, they knew what was going on in the families. They knew when the babies were born, when other family events occurred. And they were an important part of the society. This fellow rewrote that book, or updated the book every 10 years or so, and he finally, I think the last one he wrote was in the 70s, maybe the 80s, I can't remember the exact date, but you open up the book and he's got the circles again, and of course the circles now are more like the media and all that sort of stuff, the internet and so on. Alarmingly, insurance is gone. It's not there at all, and that's just another reflection that we've lost our way. Now, I think, like many of us, I, like many of you, no doubt, I'm very proud and very passionate about the noble purpose of the basics of what insurance is all about. And I've had the privilege a couple of times, literally, of delivering the check, and I've seen firsthand the dramatic impact it can have when the product's sold properly and administered properly. The impact it can have on families, people and families, is just phenomenal. So I'm very distressed, like many, about the loss of trust. The breakdown in trust. And I'm, like many, I'm encouraging the raising of educational standards. I did a lot of that when I was president of the Chartered Insurance Institute in the UK. That's good, that's important, but that's not alone. That's not enough. It's got to be about ethics, it's got to be about culture, and that's where we've got to work really, really hard in the future. So I, in summary, I consider myself very fortunate that my maths teacher suggested to me I shouldn't be a maths teacher, I should try this actuary thing. Like many of you, my careers master at the time didn't know what an actuary was, and I had to explain it and find out all myself. But it's been a great ride so far. Thanks very much.